Let's put the take.
There we go. That's a good start. I didn't have a good way to start the show. And so Jimmy helped me out with sound effect. Thanks. Appreciate that. How you guys doing?
Good. I'm doing pretty good. I wonder what all the tape is on Jimmy's fingers.
Oh, my hands. This weather kills my hands. Cracks. I can't even button my pants or use my phone.
That's
hands
why you're walking around with your pants unbuttoned?
That would be easier. No, my hand's cracking this weather so bad. It's always my right hand. I went to the doctor a couple years ago, and he's like, you have some sort of problem with your skin. He said it's genetic, and there's nothing's going to change. Basically, I was in there for 5 minutes. He said, because he says it's
that'll
usually,
be $100, please.
Oh, it's like $500. He goes, doctor. It usually affects one hand. So if you notice, you can't really see
really?
It. But this hand is fairly normal, and this hand is beat up. So this is the hand on camera that I'm always showing stuff, and it's just my hand is just dried and cracked,
like
beyond normal, and it really, really hurts when it gets down to. It feels like 5 or 7 paper cuts a day on your fingertips. And
dang.
So, and the only thing that really helps is people have said crazy glue, but then that makes a messy hand even messier. So I don't do that. But on the cracks, I just put tape tightly. The pressure alleviates the pain and then also promotes a healing because then it doesn't get dried out under the tape.
Mm. Is it just during winter or is that year
mostly round? During winter? Yeah. Yeah. I could always feel it going into the fall. And then once the summer comes, it's both my hands look the same. And then going into winter, one looks like a dinosaur hand and the other one doesn't. It looks like a zombie hand. That's why like my hands always like, you can see up close how cracked and beat up it is.
I've never had that with my hands, but Jenny and a couple of our kids have that. They in the winter, their hands get super dry and their knuckles will crack and bleed. Not from, you know, working in a shop or anything. They just, ooh, golly, man.
And then this is my other hand.
Yeah, I will use my. It's usually my thumbs crack right by the nail, and I will super glue it. This year I have a humidifier in the shop that's running all the time, and then when my hands get really dry, one of the things that helps like almost immediately is the working hands cream, and then just wear a set of rubber gloves for like an hour.
That's what I mean. I was going to do that today, but I thought it'd be too weird for the podcast. Michael Jackson glove on. But no, that's what I'm going to do today because today it's just really, really bad. I woke up and it's just, I'm in a lot of pain. But it's not going to inhibit my day. Just
I mean,
annoying.
Doing the one glove thing, it could be like your thing. Mm. That could be the thing that everybody knows you for, you know?
Among
forget the ice pick. Forget the logo. he's the one sparkly glove guy.
I think Jocko has a Michael Jackson glove. You know, Jocko's a big collector. Of
like an actual one of his gloves?
I think he does. Yeah, he's got a huge collection of Michael Jackson memorabilia.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
He sent me I don't know if I'm allowed to tell this or not. The other day he sent me a video of the locking mechanism on the Maker Knife 2.
Yeah.
And he said, "This is for you." And because I complained to him a long time ago about how the Maker Knife is awesome for right-handed people, but for left-handed people, when you go to put your finger down where you would put pressure to like use the knife, it unlocks the blade. And
ooh.
So he made a total new mechanism that doesn't do that, and it's very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
I'm excited about that.
So yeah, that's my hand saga. It's all winter. I complain about it a lot.
I'm sorry. That sound fun.
What have I been working on? I've been working on the Cadillac. If you guys see that, I put in a video. I put episode 1 of the Cadillac retransformation. I don't want to say restoration because I bought, if anybody hasn't seen it, I bought a Cadillac. It's a Cadillac engine in a cab on a frame. The back is cut off. It was either formerly an ambulance or a hearse made by Miller. You know, a lot of car companies make cars for fleets like taxis and police cars. This was I think it's a Cadillac 61, 1947. And it would be the type of car that they would give to a company, like they would make an ambulance out of it or make it into a hearse. So it's one of these utility Cadillacs. And it's got a longer wheelbase, kind of set up like a truck a little bit. And I bought it on Facebook Market with no back. It was just a naked exposed frame from the back of this driver's seat to the tail, and no lights, no nothing, just the back half is gone. And I thought it would be a good opportunity to build a Woody on. And so episode one came out where we did a lot of engine work, freed the engine, freed the brake drums, were all broken and frozen, and we got a lot of the mechanical parts moving. Almost got it started by the end of the video. If you guys watch the video, I only show two attempts, but we did like 15 because we were trying to get that pop, and we didn't get it because there's no gas tank, there's no radiator, there's a few things, there's only one quart of oil in the engine, but I wanted to just get a pop and be like, it runs, it's alive. We almost got it. But I said to Rob, I'm like, we're pushing our luck now. We kept throwing gas in the carburetor. I go, we're going to set ourselves on fire. Let's stop. New carburetor, new fuel pump, and a lot of new gaskets. Getting a new radiator coming in. Anyway, there's a lot of work. And it's been fun. And my favorite part is building the back. So I started building the back. And I could show you guys. I don't know if I have a picture of it, but I'm starting to put the framework on the back. Yeah, these pictures are too busy. There's so much stuff in the shop that's hard to see. But I began to put the framework on the back of it and sketching out what that's going to look like. And it's a lot of fun. One thing I noticed with this particular, you look at the whole daunting project, and it's just, I basically have to build 75% of a car that doesn't exist. And I look at it, and I'm like, I have no idea how I'm going to begin. I'm like, well, I know I at least need to get rid of this rot. So while I'm worried about what the rest is going to look like, I'm getting rid of the rot. And then when I get rid of the rot, I'm like, oh, that gives me a good opportunity to weld to. So then I weld to that, and then I go, oh, there's body mounts. So I could start there. The body mounts like the foundation. So as I'm digging into it and fixing or taking away what is unnecessary, it's revealing what is necessary. And it's almost exposing the process to me as I dig into it. So each piece I either add on or remove gives me the answer to what should be next. It's a little Zen-like, but I'm approaching it like, okay, if I got to put this here, then I would need a strut for that. All right, so let me put that strut there. It's always temporary. I could always take it off later. And I put the back on. I'm looking, the back is really flat. And then I go online. I look, I'm like, you know, some of these have a little bit of a bend in them. So I went back and cut 4 inches out of the roof line and moved and tilted the back in so that it gives it more of a sporty look. And it's not just a flat back truck. So each thing I do, I'm tacking and then thinking about it and tacking and thinking about it. And then after I think about it, I'm like, okay, I'll weld it. So then I welded it. And it's been a really fun process up till now. And then I'm making a metal skeleton for the back to then adhere wood to. And then most of the back is going to be made out of wood. But this metal skeleton is going to define the space and the shape in space. It's fun. And that's cool. I got new tires coming in. Definitely by the end of the next video, which I don't know when that'll be, probably within a month. Certainly get it running. It's really close. And then also, I might put out, it's been so cold and I'm kind of stalled, but I might put out a video, even though it's stalled, just saying it's stalled because of the winter, the graveyard house. I've done a lot of work on the graveyard house since the last episode. And I'm waiting for a few milestones to have a full complete cycle for the next video, but I might not wait because it's taken so long with the cold and I just ordered a whole bunch of new floor joists. I was going to maybe wait till the floor joists are in, but no, since that's going to be 2 weeks. I don't know. I'm trying to make a decision.
So, these are the floor joists that you were going to mill? Are you not
doing that? I was going to mill, but I went and spoke to the sawmill guy and he said, he's friendly. He's friends with me, Lou. He's like, which by the way, Dave, I got to take a picture of Lou. For years, I'm like, why does Lou remind me of somebody I know? And then one day it hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, he's like David Picciuto. He looks just like you. It's amazing. And I walked up to him yesterday and he's in his big giant payloader and he hops off. And he looks exactly like you look right now. Beard, glasses, and a wool hat. I got to get a picture.
Super handsome.
East Durham Lou. So Cooksburg Lou. So Lou says, he goes, for the type of beams you need, you're going to need logs that are 14 inches in diameter. He goes, they're extremely heavy. They're 14 feet long. My forklift might not even be able to pick them up. And he said, it's so much work. He goes, just use the sawmill to make an end table or something out of a stump. He goes, I'll do it for you or I'll get you the logs, whatever you want. He goes, it's your choice. It'll be about the same. But he says, you're going to end up with so much wood. And then I was driving in traffic yesterday, and I saw behind me a sawmill truck full of cut down trees. And I did a quick count of the profile. And one of those 18 wheels that are usually articulated in the middle, so there's like two sections on the cab and look like they're at least 20 feet long. One of those giant sections wasn't even enough logs that I need, just counting the profiles. Ooh. And they were all about 14 inches. I was like, that's just such a... I can't get a sawmill and then jump right into like full-on log production. I have to dabble a little bit more. There's plenty of opportunities to make things for the house with the sawmill. But to make 25 floor joists that are all 6 by 8 inches, 14 feet long, I was just, you know what, I just don't have the bandwidth right now.
Not that you're going to do this, and I'm just curious. The size of those, I mean, that is a massive beam. And you need a lot of them. Do they have to be that big at this point? Or is that because of how they were when they were put in and the span that they're spanning? Because you could always put in like a, you know, some poles or something.
I just want to keep, the reason I'm going with those is because they're similar in size to what I removed. And I just want to keep a little bit of the nostalgic feel of the house. Because what I removed was these 8-9 inch diameter trees with a flat top. And the ends were squared off to fit into the... into the rim joist. They had little square notches. And I just think it'll just look better. It'll just look more nostalgic. I could certainly go with 2x12s, 16 inches on center, and put the whole brand new floor in just so it would look like regular brand new stick construction. I just want to keep a little bit with the, a little bit more with the style and the feel of the house by going with these cut timbers. And the other difference too is I have a bandsaw mill, of course. These are circular mills, so you'll have that old-timey swirl cuts in them. Just looks a little bit more period, even though it doesn't matter. It's really more just my own personal gut feeling.
Yeah, it's your house, you know?
Yeah, so I just, and I think it'll just look cool on camera, too. It's another, I make a lot of decisions based on what's going to look good on camera.
Sure.
So I ordered $2,000 worth of 6x8s. They'll be ready in a week. So I don't know if they'll be ready and installed by the time the episode's prepped. Anyway, there's that. And then I told you guys about the Double Secret project with casted apples. I showed it on my Patreon. I'm making these cast apples. They weigh about 6 pounds each. They're for a series of awards. And once the client's okay with me talking about it, I'll post the video and show everything about those. So those are done and shipped out this week. Yeah.
Jumping back real quick to the Cadillac, I was reminded of this. I have a friend who has had a million Jeeps since he's been an adult. I don't even know how many he's had, but he gets a Jeep, an old Jeep, and then he builds it out and turns it into like a rock crawler or like a trail, and like super crazy Jeep, and then he sells it, and then he gets another one, and he just does this. And he always finds these really crazy old ones that I've never heard of. And he sent me a picture of this one the other day, and I thought of you because it looks kind of like a half Jeep. It's a, what year is it? It doesn't actually say the year, but it's a diesel CJ-10A flight tug. And so it was used in the Air Force, and it's unmodified. And so like the front of it is a Jeep, but the back of it is... like, I guess it pulls planes. So that's what it means by tug. So it has this short back little mounting point where you could, like, hook a plane up to it and pull a plane around. I'll send you a picture of it. It's really crazy looking, and I don't know what his plans are.
I've seen some really odd-looking wartime Jeeps.
They're very purpose-built for certain
things. They look almost like it's funny you should say, they look almost like things you'd see on the tarmac at an airport, kind of square and stubby.
Yeah,
there was one at the Rat Rod show last summer, and then I happened to see a similar one online last week.
Let me see. I'll send you this thing, and it's apparently two wheel drive, I guess, based on its use case. But he's going to make it into four wheel drive. That's the only thing he told me.
You can just do that.
But anyway, I guess so. I don't know. Yeah, but he's had many old crazy vehicles like that he'll just rip apart and do crazy. Something. And then, you know, all the people who are the purists who want to keep old cars old always get kind of upset with him. But he does really cool stuff with them. And he's the guy that that helped me find the cruiser, the white cruiser, when I got it originally. I got it from a friend of his, and he knew I wanted one, and so he's
you got that back, right? It's running good.
No, I don't. Okay, so I called the owner last week after we recorded. I found a friend of mine knows the owner of that shop, so I got his name. Called directly. They recognize my voice now. And so when he answered the phone, I asked for the owner, and they were like, he's not here.
He's not here.
I'll put a note and he'll call you back. He called me back the next morning at 9 o'clock, right on it. And because apparently he doesn't actually work in the shop anymore. He just, you know, the other two guys run it and he just owns the place. Anyway, so he called him back. Super nice guy. Very apologetic for how long it was taking and everything. And there were, I don't know, it didn't go anywhere. But he was like, well, now you're calling me, so now I have to start putting some pressure on the mechanic. So I'll start doing that. And the thing that was weird about it, there were a couple things that were weird about the conversation. But there were two things. One was he said, I just can't get him to work on it. Talking about the mechanic. And I'm thinking, like, he works for you. You pay his paycheck.
Yeah, that's
so
weird.
You want him to do something and he doesn't do it, then I think there, you know, like there's an issue with that thing. And he didn't go very far down that road, but he was just like, yeah, just, you know, I've been paying him to come in on the weekends and work on it here and there, but I can't get him to finish it up. That was weird. And so then we talked for a while, and I reiterated that I was very frustrated and I wanted it to be done and I wanted it out of his shop and all this stuff. So we're getting off the phone. The last thing he says is, don't worry, for the next couple weeks, I'm on your side. Click. And I'm like, what?
What?
You're just now and only for the next couple weeks you're on my side? Aren't you, like, you're a service shop. You service things for people.
No, they don't.
In their interest. You know, like,
I'd go get it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I know you would. But
sorry, Bob.
That's all right. I did drive by there on Saturday, and the mechanic's truck, they're closed on Saturdays. The mechanic's truck was parked in front of the place, and I could see a light bar in the hood of the cruiser. It was being worked on. So that was at least something. But but that was 5 days ago, you know. So anyway. So to answer your question, I do not have the cruiser back.
Now we have nothing to talk about in the after show.
That's right. And we'll come up with something. Right. Dave, what have you been doing?
So February is the first month since, I think, August.
It's the second it's month.
It is the second. Sorry. Yes. I'm still learning. It's the first month I only have two obligations as far as videos since like August, and so I just been taking it easy, slowing down a little bit. So I'm still working on the project from last week, which is this resin vase where I pour resin out and I let it start to harden up, and then I kind of mold it into a vase. And on camera last week I showed that I waited too long and it was really hard to get into the shape that I wanted. And so I went in for a version 2, and I decided to make it even more complicated. And so I made a silicone mold to pour the resin into. So I drew up this thing in Illustrator and then cut it out on the scroll saw. So I had all these kind of ragged edges, and then made a mold and then poured the resin into that mold. And I got a much better, I timed it much better. And then I did a second one that kind of wraps around this first one. And the colors kind of play off of each other. And then, so now I'm working on the pedestal for this. And so it's a wood pedestal that this weird resin vase is going to sit on. And then I'm going to make more molds and look and make it look like the epoxy or the vase is melting into or dripping onto the pedestal. So the pedestal and the vase will all be one thing. And it's an experiment, and I'm just kind of taking my time and trying to make it look like the way I want it to look.
Cool. Yeah, looking forward to seeing that.
Yes. And so it's been really nice to not feel the pressure of all these videos to do, which is poor me making money doing the thing I love. But it is nice to slow down a little bit. And next weekend, I'm actually going away for 3 days for a writing retreat, just me by myself. And I told Kelly, I'm like, hey, is it okay if I just go away for a weekend just to...
She goes, finally!
Yeah, just to decompress and write. And she's like, of course. I'm like, will you find me an Airbnb and don't tell me where it is until the day I go? And so she did. So I don't even know where I'm going. I know it's within a 2-hour radius of where I live.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
You're going alone?
I'm going alone. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to like with other guys to write?
No, just me. I need time to myself without wiener dogs wanting to be petted. And yeah, so I'm going to
sounds tragic.
Disconnect from the internet.
Yeah. That's a lot to deal with right there. I can't tell you.
You guys have no idea. You have no idea. They're taking a nap right now so they can wake up and be petted later. But I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm trying to go in without much of an obligation. Like, I'm telling myself, if I don't write anything, if I don't come up with any good ideas over the 3-day weekend, totally cool. It's just a time to get away and think about writing. And when I say writing, I have like 15 or 20 ideas for future scripts. They're not projects, they're scripts. So lately I've been trying to work on a project, but also talk about a thing that's kind of on my mind. And since I am scripting a little bit more and doing voiceovers, it takes a little bit more writing. It takes a little bit more time.
So is this like, for lack of a better term, is it like a rant or a...
No, I wouldn't say I don't know. To me, a rant sounds negative.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I said, for lack of a better term, more like a monologue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, internal thoughts that's going in my head. I don't know if I can... I'll pull up my notes and see if there's anything in my... I mean, so there's one... This sounds negative, but it's not. There's one start of a script called All My Projects Are Crap. Except I don't use the word crap. And it's meant to say I want to talk about how there's flaws in every single thing that I do. And I want to make a whole video on that, on why the flaws are okay. But I'm also making a new thing. So that's how like two things can happen in the same time. And then, you know, I have an idea for everything you make is a box, which is kind of obvious as woodworkers. Cabinets are boxes, boxes are boxes. Everything kind of starts from a box. And yeah, that's all I really want to. I'm a hack.
Yeah.
This is a good one that I've started. but I'm not an expert at anything that I do. And I just kind of learn. Like, I'm not an expert at resin. I've never made a resin vase melting into a pedestal. So I'm kind of hacking my way through it. And so those are the ideas that I have that I need to finish writing, and this is what this little trip is supposed to help with.
That's awesome.
Originally, I was going to ask you guys if you wanted to do like a 3-day getaway and just come up with video ideas. We're just away in a cabin, and all we do is we're not filming anything. It's not for, you know, a podcast. We're just going to get away and just kind of write together and help each other. And then I thought, well, maybe in the future, but right now I want to do it by myself. But I'm throwing that out there to you guys. If you guys ever just want to get away for a weekend, invite some other people, and all
I'd be
it
into
is,
that.
Is an idea retreat. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I have been thinking about doing the same kind of writing thing that you're talking about. I've been working on an outline for a book that I want to write for a while. Never told anybody about it, but I've got this outline, and I'm trying to completely flesh out the outline before I apply enough time to actually write the thing. So I was starting to think about when that time might be, is like when the outline will be ready for me to take the time that you're talking about taking, that's just dedicated for one thing. Like that would be really awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to hear how that goes for you.
And shout out to Kelly for planning this trip for me and saying, hey, that's cool, go do your thing.
Yeah, I wonder if she would find me an Airbnb.
She loves that stuff, so I'm sure she
that's
would.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, that's cool. Let's see. For me, I am the thing I talked about last week, the Panna Court, the little one-on-one soccer thing. I'm painting that this week. It is so big. It is 6 panels that are 8x3, and I have to paint both sides of them, and they have framing on them that I'm painting, and there's like a door, and there's goals, and so it's kind of a pain. But the event is this coming Saturday, so I've got to get it all done and then take it there and put it together on Friday, and then I got to go back on Saturday around all the other stuff that I'm doing on Saturday to take video of people playing in this thing. But so I'm trying to wrap that up this week. And then trying to write more of the course scripting stuff so that I can do some of that next week. And then next week, to answer, somebody was talking in one of Jimmy's comments about the Gia taking so long. Next week, I'm going to go out and start working on the Gia again and focus on trying to get the back end, which is probably the biggest section of metal to replace. It's almost the entire back end, bottom half. And so I'm going to go out and start digging at that. And the thing, it's tough. I want to do it, and I've been putting it off because of the weather, and the weather next week is not going to be better. So I'm kind of upset about that, but I also am tired of putting it off and tired of, you know, like having other stuff in front of it. So I'm just going to go out and start working on it and kind of get as far as I can get given the weather. And if I can't get a video ready, then I'll switch gears, but that's what I'm doing. There's also part of me, and this is totally fine to do, but there's also part of me that has been wondering if I should just go out and finish the metalwork without trying to make a video about it, just to make it faster and just to get that part of it done, because I've done so much of that in video that I don't know how it's going to be interesting to see other than just that it's progression, that it's something moving along. But
right,
you know, it would be much faster to do, to not have to worry about making it interesting. You know what I mean?
I think you do it alone, do it without camera, and then when you come across a hiccup, that's a learning moment for you, film that, even if it's already started and well almost done.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause yeah. I wanted to show an example last night. All I'm doing is welding these sticks together, these 1.5-inch square tubes I'm welding together, and it's kind of boring, and like I said, the shop's a little busy, so it's hard to see these lines on camera. But I did want to make a slight curve in one of them, so I cut it halfway through and I bent it over another piece. And I did that close up on the table, and then instead of showing me welding it in, I just then cut 20 minutes later. So this morning I downloaded the footage. It shows me bending it on the table, and then the next piece of footage I shot was it in place. I didn't have to show me welding. And when you see that part of the video, if you guys can remember that, it's a 3-second clip of me bending it and a 3-second clip of it in place. And that's it. And I think that's really what you can show, for instance, the replacement part, and then just show the finished part.
Yeah.
And then maybe even shoot it so it's superimposed over it, so you could have the one piece of footage showing a cross dissolve of it in place or something. And then all the work in between, and just say that was 3 days worth of work, what you just saw in an 8-second a second cross dissolve.
I think the problem that I don't know kind of what you're talking about this work to be done is just the order of operations. It's just welding panels together. It's cutting out old panels, lining up the new ones, and then welding them together, just like every other thing that I've done on the body so far. The thing I don't know is which panel do I cut out first, and how much of it do I weld back before I cut out the next panel and weld, you know, because I have to keep it all in line, and it's like all this stuff has to connect correctly so that it fits on the chassis. but it all has, I don't know. Yeah, that's the thing. So I'm trying to figure out how to make the video about that, about solving that. You know, what is a logical solution to doing that stuff and keeping things where they need to be, and less about the welding and the grinding and the, you know, but.
That brings up something for me that I went through last night. I'm trying my hardest to make sure everything is symmetrical. I'm doing my best to make sure everything. And you would imagine if there's a 24-inch piece on this side, it's got to be 24 inches on the other side. And then at one point I came across this thing last night where I had to cut what I thought was a symmetrical, basically a pillar in the middle of the long back. One side is, say, 41, and the other side, I was like, I brought over another 41-inch piece, and it was too long. And I'm like, whoa, that means I have to cut this and move this over. And I cut this other thing and moved it over. And then I'm like, wow, that looks really out of whack. If I just cut an inch off of the 41-inch piece and make it 40, everything looks straight. I know it's a joke. You know, look straight, it is straight. But everything looks normal. And then it occurred to me, no one's going to be able to see the passenger side of the car and the driver's side of the car next to each other.
That's true.
Ever.
Yeah.
They're all going to know.
No one's going to know.
You just told everybody.
No one's going to know. So if one side of the car isn't exactly the same as the other, but when you stand back and you kind of do a little walk around, everything looks the same. But in technicality, you bring a ruler out, and from the body mount to the top rib, it's 1 inch shorter on one side than the other. No one's going to know. So it's maintaining the integrity of what looks right. But obviously, in your case, yeah. I don't have this problem where things have to fit and doors have to align because none of them exist yet. But in your case, so if I make the driver's side back door will be one. This is the consequence. The driver's side back door is going to be 1 inch shorter than the passenger side back door. And you would imagine they would be exactly the same in a typical car manufacturing process. But the one's going to be, no one's going to know.
Mm.
They're gonna know,
but it's also not their car. So
yeah, but in your case, you have other panels that need to fit up, so you got to make sure your fitment's good.
Maybe that's the better phrase is, "No one's gonna care."
Oh, there you go.
No well, one's gonna no, care. They're gonna care. No one's gonna care.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, the good thing is this is all on the back. And it's not really the part that sits on, you know, it does, they're not, there's not a corner frame in the back corner that the body has to sit on. It sits on the middle over the doors and stuff. And then this back end is less connected. It's just kind of connected to itself. So it may not be a big deal, you know, but it's just, it's one of those things that I don't want to get wrong because then I don't know, start over. I'm not sure what I would do if I got it all wrong. So somebody sent me a link the other day for two Karmann Ghias. It was a like a Facebook Marketplace thing, and it was one that ran but looked bad and one body that looked pretty good but didn't have an engine in it. And it was like $3,500 or something for two of them, and it was in California, so it was not,
I'm
not
sure you for me. You show the Instagram post of the guy driving a red Ghia at a car show that was just pulled out of a barn. Have you seen this?
No.
It was just pulled. He's driving, drives it up, and like everyone crowds around it because it's a real barn find. And he's driving it, and it's covered with dust and dirt. And he goes, "Look at this!" And he gets out, and he opens the front hood, and there's like maybe a dead possum that's all mummified, and a giant mouse nest in the hood. The whole inside of the front hood is a mouse nest with a dead possum mummified, and they're all laughed. And that's the end of the video.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Engine's in the back, so there's all sorts of space up front for animals.
Yeah.
Whatever. There's a guy, I'd have to look up his name. He's probably listening, but there's a guy that's been sending me inspiration and stuff on Instagram of his Ghia that he built. And it is the color that I've talked about wanting. And so like he's told me the color name and stuff. And he wanted his to also be, excuse me, kind of James Bond-like, you know? And so he's done some stuff on the interior to make it like the little switch on the shifter with the, you know, for the rocket, and he's made a little console and all this stuff, and it is a beautiful car. Like, he did an amazing job. He took it to his first car show the other day, and he was trying to finish it up just in time to take it to this car show, and he won at the car show. But this nice. Beautiful car.
What color?
It's a kind of a dark silver.
Mm. Like a James Bond, like the Austin Martin.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a gunmetal kind of color. And it's just, it's gorgeous. And it's exactly the color that I was thinking. So
nice.
Yeah. But I'll have to look him up. I'll find his account and put it in the show notes because it is a gorgeous car. Speaking of Instagram, we had a sweet thing happen yesterday. Laura Kampf, who I realized in the video, I said Laura Kampf because we didn't know her at the time, and so I didn't know how to say her name. Yeah. Anyway, she posted like the sweetest reel talking about how this podcast changed her life. And man,
it's so sweet. She sent it to me a couple days ago just to let me know she was going to post it. Maybe just give me a warning. Of course, I don't think she needed my approval. She wanted it, but it was amazing. And it's just so heartwarming. And the comments under her posts are also equally as heartwarming. So,
oh my goodness, they were great. Yeah.
Yeah. Really sweet. Thank you, Laura.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Sometimes we need a little reminder that people actually listen to the show and it's just not the three of us getting together to chat for an hour and a half every week.
But then there's pressure. Then we have to do good.
Well, yeah, hopefully after really 10 years, the pressure is gone and we just
there's chat. No pressure in this. No pressure in this at all.
Yeah.
Except the pressure to have a topic on occasion, which we rarely have. But you did have, you asked Discord for a little topic today.
I did. I got one from Jim Sammons, and he basically asked, CNC, laser, 3D printer, or something similar, what would you, if you were going to start a business around, which one would you use to get started? And it's... and is that answer different if you're just doing it as a hobby? And I thought about this for a little bit this morning, and it reminded me of like when I got my laser, my big laser, I was like, man, I'm going to make so many things that I can make and sell. And when I got my CNC, I'm like, I can automate so many things that I can make and sell. And I've never made and sold anything that I've use the 3D printer or CNC or the laser with. I think I like the possibility of that, but I have, if you look on Etsy, there are so many people making like custom things already cut on the laser. All you got to do is just upload your phrase, your name, and somebody can do that. And so I've yet to come up with an original idea that I could make and sell using my laser or 3D printer or CNC. But if I was going to start out and I had those choices, I think I would go laser first. It's just the learning curve with the laser is much smaller than a CNC or 3D printer. And it's so fast. I can go from idea to something cut out within minutes. That's really nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The 3D printer, might have less of a learning curve, but you can get as complex as you want. And I keep it pretty simple for me. But when I see these other videos of people doing these dovetail joints on a 3D printer so they can make a big piece, or stopping the print halfway through and adding magnets and doing all this other stuff, it's mind-blowing. I can't even think like that. And then the CNC can get just as complicated with all the feeds and speeds and all the different bits that you can do. And then you got to learn all the software to go over top of it. So for me, I think it's the laser. It's just the easiest thing to do or to learn.
The laser, you see a lot of etching. Laser, you can do a lot of engravings, basically. You see a lot of people with engravings. So you can get a laser and really get into the engraving business. You see people making earrings and that kind of stuff. I don't know what... It doesn't seem to have a lot of substance as far as dollar value, but people do make a living at it. It seems that most people do well with etching stuff like corporate identity on mugs and that sort of thing. But if you're going to get into a CNC machine, in my opinion, you could make things that seem to have a more higher ticket value. Making kits and Apple boxes and, you know, Glimpse Inside. Chris Burton is doing really well with that type of stuff. He recently borrowed my design for sawhorses, and he's going to be selling them as a kit. And he's got lots of cool stuff, shop assisting stuff and storage and that type of thing. those, because of, I learned a long time ago in the toy business, we used to sell a sand art kit, and it did really well because people would pick it up and feel the weight of it. And they're like, whoa, this is like a lot of value because of the physical weight, because we're selling 3 pounds of sand in a cardboard box because of the actual product. So the physical weight gives you that perceived value. So the idea of picking up a little trinket pair of earrings at a craft show made on a laser versus a stool kit for a kid to step up to the sink to brush his teeth is a bit of a different thing. But again, it's a higher entry level per dollar per mount to get a CNC and a bigger learning curve. But if you dig into it, I think any one of those, even a 3D printer, I know Drew Witt makes a fairly good living selling 3D printed objects to assist in a lot of festival stuff and a lot of stuff like that. You really got to carve out your niche. And if you're able to carve out your niche, you could make a living at any one of those three things. I think you really need to develop what the product is. If you don't have anything, you really got to look around and decide what type of product you're attracted to and then engineer backwards which one would be the best thing. Dave?
You need the idea first before you can decide. If you're debating between those three things, you have to have the idea first.
Yeah. I mean, I think while you were talking, I was trying to get back to what would be the actual question, not which machine to buy, but what is the question? And I think for me, it would be, how do you think? Like, do you think in... someone who thinks in 3D printer thinks in from nothing, build outwards, and you can make anything from a central point. That's kind of how I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
With a CNC, you're thinking about profiles. And even with the laser, you're kind of thinking about profiles that can fit together to make something that's volumetric. And there's more
stock.
To it than that.
You're working basically
sure. Yeah,
from
yeah,
stock.
From stock. Yeah. And so, you know, I think a good thing to start with would be, how do you think? But then I was also thinking about reasons why different things might be problematic. So with the CNC, there's potentially a lot of post-processing. There's a lot of sanding.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like getting rid of tabs. There's a lot of work you have to do to make the thing that the machine did usable as a product. They're all going to have that to a degree. But there's also a lot of cleanup. There's a lot of noise. You have bits that are going to be consumables that you're going to constantly have to, you know, keep up with the bits and stuff. You're going to need more than one bit to do more than one type of cut. So it's not just the machine. It's also, you know, the tools that go with the machine. So there's some extra stuff there. With the 3D printer, you have a more limited production. I'm thinking if you buy a 3D printer, not like a print farm. But if you buy one tool, you have a pretty limited production amount depending on what you're making. So if you have a product that does super well and it takes you 5 hours to print one of them, that's not going to be a very efficient way to make that product. So it definitely has its place, but there's a limit there. I think the other side of that limit is that 3D printer is, I don't want to say more capable. It is more likely that you could make a product that is very small but highly valuable on a 3D printer.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying with a laser, something small might be a set of earrings. That's not necessarily highly valuable. But making a connector that goes in between your microphone and the microphone stand that somebody else is going to need, that is a highly valuable piece because it doesn't exist anywhere else. And
right.
it's not subjective about being like, oh, this is a really great looking connector. It's a connector that goes from A to B, you know. So I think you have a higher potential value for smaller things on a 3D printer. But I'm with you, David. Laser is it is easy. It is quiet. You just have to have a window to vent things out. You can work in a pretty wide range of materials. You have cutting and engraving. You can make flat. You can make volumetric. You can make stacked. You can, you know, if you get a rotary, that's like a whole nother level of stuff that you can add to it. I feel like the laser is the place I would start. If I had to scale my shop down to a single tool, to figure out how to make money with, it would be the
Ooh, that's a different question. I have a different answer. If I had to scale down to a single tool, I think I would go CNC.
Really?
Because I could use the CNC as a table saw, as a miter saw, as a band saw. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I guess that's another thing to think about. When I say laser, or if you say CNC, I'm thinking of the machines that I currently have that I use. Mm-hmm. So 130-watt laser as the sole tool is very different than a 10-watt laser. You know what I mean? I could cut plywood on mine. You couldn't do that on a smaller laser. But the same for CNC. If you get a really small CNC, yeah, you can engrave pretty little things, but you can't cut a sheet of plywood because it's physically not big enough. So it depends on the specific type, size, power of machine, I guess, for that answer. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think a laser in general, if given enough size, is probably the most versatile. But at the same time, I think more 3D printing now. I think it took me a long time to understand that about myself and to actually like lean into it. But I use the 3D printer way more than I would use the other tools, just because it's the easiest for me to. I feel like there's fewer limitations on what the thing is with the 3D printer. I can model any shape, and then I just have to figure out how to print it. What orientation do I put it in? With a laser, you're pretty limited what your final shape. It has to be made out of stacks, you know, a stack of pieces, or it has to be made out of joints. And so that adds this limitation to it. So these days, I end up using the 3D printer more for, I mean, the only one product that I'm making is a 3D printed product. But I think when I think of new ideas, I think that way. And then I fall back to the laser. I fall back to the other tools.
To toot my own horn, I made a little side table that's in our living room based on a design by Stuff Seth Makes. And I made this whole side table on the laser. And I did the whole thing in stacks and different stacks that kind of fit together. And then I veneered the whole thing. And the whole purpose of the video was, can I make furniture that doesn't look like it was made with a laser? Like it just looks like regular woodworking type furniture. You can do it, but you have to jump through a lot of hoops. And it's a long process. I could have made the project in a half a day with table saw and a bandsaw. But it took me 2 days with the laser and stacking and everything. But there's a great exercise in limitation on how far you can push yourself. Because when you have all the tools in the world, if it's you're not really using the problem solving part of your brain. If you only have a few tools, a lot of times you're going to come up with something that's a little bit different, a little bit more creative, because you have these limitations that you have to work around, and you're doing a little bit more problem solving.
Yeah, that's true. I guess another question around this would be, like, if somebody were asking themselves this question, which one do I get? Another thing would be kind of value to capability per machine. The cost of 3D printers, of good, reliable 3D printers, has dropped significantly in the last few years. And I think you can get something that you could really lean on to do exactly what you want it to do for, I don't know, let's average it at $500. Because I know there are some like bamboos that are cheaper than that. There are bamboos and Prusas that, and those are the two companies that I always go to just because they're like kind of bulletproof. But you know, up in the $1,000 range, they're really good machines from both companies. And so let's average it at $500. You could get I can do this 3D printer, right? I can rely on it. Laser, I don't even know. I'm not sure. I have not kept up with the laser market, but I know there are so many companies making lasers now that the cost to size ratio has to be quite a bit lower. David, do you have any idea kind of what you can get a good first laser for these days?
I mean, so lasers can be a little bit confusing. You'll see all these Chinese companies make, you know, $200 lasers, and they don't really cut. They just are for engraving. Mm-hmm. They're just for etching. You're going to, if you want to be able to cut 1/8 inch and bigger, you're going to want to spend $2,500. And, you know, X-Tool makes a great one. I work with a company called One Laser. They make a great one. But
then if you need you want a palette that's big enough, 3x4, you're looking at about 14, 12, 10 to 15.
Yes. Bucks. Yeah. I have a $13,000 laser in the garage. It's frozen in the garage right now. You can, depending on the size and the power, it's just, the cost goes through the roof. But same thing with the CNC. You might start off with a $2,000 CNC, and then 5 years later, you have $5,000 in bits and templates and clamps and all this. And each one is a rabbit hole. And somebody is going to say, well, so-and-so makes a CNC that you can turn into a laser and a 3D printer. And I don't have any experience with those CNCs that can do it all, but I know from other things like kitchen gadgets and stuff, you don't want one tool that can do it all.
Because it's too difficult to transfer. Yeah. It's too difficult to make the change.
Yeah. Well, and like I know specifically for those machines, when they say that it has a laser on it, that means it has a like 10 watt diode laser, which is going to barely burn into the surface of wood. It's not going to cut anything. It's for, you know, decoration and engraving, which is one thing to do, but it's not the same as buying a laser that can cut through material. So I'm looking here on Onefinity. I know some people who have these machines. I've never used one, so I have no experience. But their biggest one is a 32x32 CNC, and it is $2,500. And I think, you know, the Inventables machine is probably around that same price, I would imagine. So from that perspective, just given those three broad things, you can get a couple of 3D printers.
That's true.
For the price of either one of those.
Yeah.
And so, you know, right there, you spend $2,500 to buy five 3D printers, then my argument about limited production is gone. You have basically no noise, no cleanup, no exhaust, no sawdust. You know, there's advantage right there to just look at the cost and capability of kind of what you could get for the money. But, you know, also if you're trying to get into something for the first time and you're not sure it's going to work, spending $500 or $1,000 on a tool is a little less risky than $2,500 or more, you know, for something that you may end up not using or may not pay for itself or whatever. So I don't know. There's a lot into it. And I don't think any of them are wrong choices. It really just comes down to what you're going to make and how you think of new ideas, for me.
I'm in a few Facebook groups for CNC and lasers, and it's a great, you know, if you're just kind of doom scrolling, it's great to see like what other people are doing. But I see so half the posts are just people selling their CNCs or their lasers because they just don't use them, and it was a huge investment. And for some people, it sounds amazing, like you're going to do all this digital stuff. But for some people, it's just not as fun as hands-on woodworking, removing the software out of the equation.
Yeah. When I was trying to sell my full-spectrum laser, I joined a couple of Facebook groups that were just called something like Buy and Sell Lasers, something like that. And it was specifically for people who were trying to liquidate their machines or people who were trying to buy used high-quality machines that had been, you know, in a production environment or something. So if you are looking for something like that, you don't have to buy new. You can look in groups like that and find something close to you that you can maybe just go pick up. You save on a ridiculous amount of shipping. I'm sure there's very similar things for CNC. 3D printers are probably less of an issue for that just because of the cost and shipping cost and stuff. But yeah, there's definitely options there. And, you know, makerspaces are always a good option too. If you can find one around that's still running, you can test out an idea on all of those machines and see which one makes the most sense for you without having to buy it, you know.
You can also send your files out to a third company that will do the laser CNC, or 3D printing for you. And then you can get your file, your piece back, and you can determine, oh yeah, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. I will say, with making a thing that is not 100% manufactured by you, and what I'm thinking here is this camera mount that I've started making, I have to buy these stainless steel dowels. They don't have to be stainless, but that's what I got. And I found those on Amazon because I didn't know how many I would need, so I bought a bag of 50 of them, and I've bought several more bags of those since then. And so the problem with that is that now I am reliant on my design holds together with these pins, which theoretically I should be able to get from lots of different places. But the one diameter that I need of these pins and the quantity, a big enough quantity to be useful to buy, the only place I can find them so far is without going to, like, you know, some factory and having them made for myself, is just going to Amazon. So if you are making a thing that relies on other hardware, another thing to consider is, can you not rely on other people's hardware? Is there a way that you can manufacture that in or get rid of the use for it? 3D printing might be the best for something like that, because you can end up kind of making your own hardware as well as, or building it into the design. Mm. Whereas, you know, with the CNC, you know, you need a certain type of hinge for a thing that you're making. Well, then you are reliant on that hinge being available to you or to the person who's buying the kit. So, you know, that's another consideration, that 3D printer might give you more flexibility to not have to rely on outside hardware if you want to go that route. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm 3D printing something and buying hardware. So
I just went through that. I had to make a 1-hour trip to Detroit on Monday to go get a 5-gallon container of ethanol for the finish that I only sell to Patreon. And I went through a whole 5-gallon container of this in less than a year and had to make a trip to... You can't just order this stuff and have it shipped, because shipping is insane on hazardous chemicals. Materials. Yeah. So, and this place in Detroit was the closest place that I could go. And this is one of the reasons I have no desire to ever sell this to the public. I'm just going to continue making it for myself and selling it to Patreon people, because it's such a pain. I hate shipping. I hate shipping so much. It's just not what I want to focus on.
Meanwhile, we're talking about lasers, and I sell my leather bags. I sell some of my leather bags are as much as $500 each, and I cut them on the laser and assemble them. But it starts with the laser cutting leather, and I assemble the bag. And you see, there I'm saying lasers give you more trinkety things. And meanwhile, one of my main businesses last year was making the leather bags on the laser. But I wasn't thinking of it in terms of that, because I'm thinking in terms of small stuff. But because I have a big palette on my laser, I could put a big piece of leather in there and cut and get a decent sized handbag, all made in one piece of leather.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's another thing to think about, is the material that you're wanting to work in, because leather, of those three, you can't CNC leather well, I wouldn't expect. And the 3D printer's useless there. So the material that you're planning on working with probably has some consideration there too. And if you don't know what the product is, if you don't know what the end result is going to be, it's going to be more difficult to make an informed choice on which type of machine to start with. But
yep.
Any other thoughts on this? I think that's a good question.
One thing that David said is there's lots of used machines available. People's life circumstances change and the machine becomes available. So it could be a lower entry level if you're willing to take a chance on a used machine. I know that's how Derek got into it. He bought a machine that would have been more than $20,000. I think he paid less than $7,000 or $6,000 for it. He got a 4x8 CNC parts. Remember that was the name of a company?
Oh, yeah. Avid now.
Yeah, which is now called Avid. So it was a CNC parts machine at the time.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters while you guys find something to recommend. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon that supports the show. We are super grateful for everybody over there. Oh, remember last week I was saying how some people were asking about the regular show and the after show and how you could listen to them back to back? Somebody chimed in there and said that they use Overcast, which is what I listen to podcasts in as well. But you can set up a playlist and only have two podcasts go into the playlist. And since they're in the order that they're posted, they will show up there in the right order. And so you can just roll right from one into the next. So there you go.
Smart people.
Yeah. Yeah. But big thanks to everybody over there, especially our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Manejid, Grab Your Creative, OMG Made, and a pretty big deal. thanks to everybody over there that supports us.
Thank you.
We are very grateful. And you can join up that group and get the after show. Everybody gets it, no matter the level. You can join up at patreon.com/makingit at any level. We would be very grateful. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I do. I got somebody. And I don't know if we talked about him before, but he's... His politics are not for everybody, but I think he's a genius in the way that he decided to create a channel. And maybe we've talked about him, Brian Kleiner from Lee Valley Workshop. And he does monologues, which made me think of you, David. He does monologues over making something. So while he's making, he's very, very intelligent. And he has a very good vocabulary. And he philosophizes while he works. Over voiceover, and he's really good at it. And I don't know if you guys have probably seen some of his stuff has gone viral. And I just lost it. I was going to send it to you. You'll recognize him when I show it to you guys. But I'll forward it to our chat, and we could put it in the show notes.
Okay.
But Lee Valley Workshop. If you guys aren't following him, I'm surprised because he's like I said, he's got a couple of he makes cutting boards and stuff.
Cool.
I'm going to go with Laura Kampf. It was a nice little Instagram video yesterday, and in the video she said thank you for recommending me, which I think it was it you, Bob, that recommended her?
I don't know.
It was a long time ago.
I heard of her from Jimmy, so.
You brought her up when she was only doing online. What was that? What was that used to be called when you do an online post? And
the weekly woodworking wrap up review.
No. Before video, when people would go on and do
A blog.
A blog. Yeah. Forgot that was the name. Uh-huh. That was only vlog. But she was doing a blog before she went to a video. Do you remember that? You mentioned her.
No.
You mentioned her blogging before she ever made a video.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember her videos, like the first.
That's how first I remember. That's how out, I mean. Maybe somebody could find that episode where you brought up the blogging for the first time, and then shortly thereafter, maybe within that year, she started making videos.
I don't remember that, but cool.
Yeah, thanks, Laura.
Mine is lately I've been getting recommendations on YouTube that are totally new to me, and it's usually one good video. And then I don't watch anything else, or the other ones I watch don't do much for me. This was a musician guy named Brad Arthur. And the video is called Give Me 9 Minutes and I'll Give You 10 Years. And he talks about, for 9 minutes, he talks about building a career in music. And it's like a list of do this. And he's basically trying to help somebody get started faster than he got started. And he's trying to dispel rumors about whether it's possible to make a living in music. And it is, there's a little bit of it that is music specific, but the majority of it is creative life kind of specific. And so I think there's some real, it's well thought out. It's well spoken. And there's some really good practical advice on who to listen to and how to safeguard your work and how to prioritize creativity. And he said one line in there that I've repeated in the last 24 hours to like three or four different people. and it was, you have to rest as hard as you work. Mm. I love that. Like, that is good. Like, rest hard is something I have not thought about.
What does that mean?
I mean, I've thought about it, but not in those words.
Like, I don't know what that means. I don't understand this.
Well, like, intentionally rest.
I can't understand that.
I know you can't. But in he made the point of, like, intentionally resting so that your creative time is amped up. You know, he talks about boredom being a necessary part of creativity. It's stuff that we've talked about several times, but he says the whole thing really well. I went on to listen to a little bit of his music, and it's good. It's not for me, but, you know, that's not the point. This video had some really good stuff in it, I think, for creative people who are trying to make a living at it. So go check that out.
Years ago, I got a quarter rest tattooed on my arm to remind myself to rest. I don't do it.
Did you get a new tattoo the other day?
Yes. I was just about to ask. What is it? Let's see it.
Is that after show?
David Lynch's philosophy, The Art Life. I got it tattooed on my wrist. You can't read it all at once because I didn't want it that understandable.
What does it say?
Visible. The Art Life, which is the David Lynch philosophy of being open, which you talk about all the time, being open to ideas. And then the whole art life philosophy is about, he relates it to catching fish. You go fishing. Sometimes you don't come up with anything. Sometimes you do. Sometimes the fish are small. Sometimes the fish are big. But you're not going to catch any ideas unless you go fishing. And it's about waiting for the ideas to come to you. You have to allow that time to wait. You have to be, you have to rest. He would talk about this. You have to have downtime. His philosophy just really, it actually changed my life when I read his book. I read a couple books back to back, and the combination of these books changed my outlook on what I want to do. And so I got The Art Life tattooed on my wrist. And it's weird, when I show it on, it wraps all the way around my wrist. And when I show it on camera, my skin is stretched, so it looks all funky and weird. But when my arm hangs down straight, it's all, I was warned by my friend who did it that it's going to look weird when you stretch and turn your wrist. And I'm like, that's what I want.
Funky and weird.
Funky and weird, cool. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
No, I guess that was it.